I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Dito!
Yeah. I made it. I've made it to the pod. Not like I had to beg George to get me on or anything.
Dean's very sad that he wasn't on the Christmas episode.
I don't really mention it much.
Welcome to Drum and Drummer, a podcast focused on drums, drumming and drummers. I'm George Pickering, and that's Ben Winty, and we are both professional drummers in this business we call music. So stick around and join us as we pass the time whilst trying to stay in time.
What frustrates you about George the most?
Oh, that's a great question, isn't it?
Me, Ben Winty. Him, George Pickering. It's Drum and Drummer. Bloody hell. It's Drum and Drummer.
Brilliant. Your best
Thursday
one
morning.
Well, there's more.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I should have stopped, actually.
Yeah, it's fine.
Stopped. Yeah.
How are you? You all right?
Yeah, good. Yeah, good. Good, good. Deep into February now.
Yep.
So getting out of the winter doldrums. We get to that point where it just starts getting lighter.
Yeah.
It's a lovely feeling, isn't it? Lovely feeling where it just starts getting a bit louder in the evening.
That was a tough January. Very cold.
Januaries are tough. Very windy. You good?
Okay. Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. I think we should probably explain. We've got a guest today, and it's not a drummer.
It's not a drummer. Bloody hell, they've done it again.
They've done it again.
What are these guys doing?
Yeah, what are they going to do next? Some questions asked. Are you scraping the barrel? Have you run out of drummers? Yes to both. But also, no, because I think it's just quite good to get a perspective of, it's Dean Llewellyn, and he's a guitarist, and he's a bloody good mate of mine. And just thought, like, what are they thinking, you know, when they're playing with drummers?
Yeah.
He does a lot of gigs with a lot of
drummers.
And if
a man describes your podcast as, you think it would be shit, but it's actually all right.
Yeah.
Get him on.
Get him on.
Prove them wrong.
He was disappointed.
Now you're
he wasn't
part
on
of
the
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're part of the legacy now, yeah? So when you now say it's shit, you're calling yourself shit.
Yeah.
I've heard lots about Dino.
He didn't say it was shit.
No, he didn't, yeah.
But
I've heard lots about Dino. First time I met him. So,
it
was finally good to connect.
Yeah, that's all we need to say about him. You know, he's a guitarist, and I thought it was interesting to... I didn't plan for it. My God, I didn't do any planning. I had one question planned, as you'll find out. That was it, as I knew he'd be able to carry the conversation, and he did. It's just interesting. How are they doing when they're at the front and we're banging away at the back? You know what I mean? In a gig scenario on instruments. Should we just go in?
Let's just do it, mate.
Yeah.
Here we go. It's the Dino
Llewellyn.
Llewellyn. I've heard, Dean, that you've described this podcast as...
I'm paraphrasing.
You think it will be shit, but it's actually all right. Is that an accurate quote?
Yeah. I think I'd say it probably is an accurate quote, yeah.
That's what he's told people about. Because whenever we go out drinking, Dean and I, he'll tell people two things about me. One is tell the snake story. And the other one is, George has a podcast. And then people go, oh, do you? What's it like? And then you answer for me and go, well, I think it'll be shit, but it's all right. It's okay.
Yeah, unless... no, I think I was pleasantly surprised. I'm starting a podcast from a mate, from a good mate, is, I think you're always going to be like, oh, are you sure, mate?
Yeah.
Sure? Is that a good idea? But I think, no, you've done incredibly well, haven't you? You get some amazing drummers on. As a drummer myself, I'm very privileged to be here.
Well, we should explain, you're not a drummer.
No, I'm not a drummer.
You're a guitarist, but you are a good mate. The only question, I've said this to Ben, the only question I've really got to ask you is, what do you look for when playing with a drummer? I mean, you can answer that now or later.
I was thinking, you text me before a minute ago saying, give us five, and I just thought, they've not planned this at all, have they?
No, we haven't. No, not at all. Some guests I write pages on, you know what I mean? Like,
you do a lot of prep.
You, I haven't prepped at all. At all, you know.
You've done the prep over the previous 7 years.
Well, that's it. That's the prep. Let's talk about how we met. You know,
so we're putting up to this, isn't it?
Do you want to? After this, you're dead to me.
How did we meet, or what do I look for in a drummer?
We'll do the drummer one later because that's literally the only question I have.
Drums are secondary, really, aren't they?
Yeah. Let's talk about us. Do you want to tell the story of how we met?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we met on a function, didn't we? We met on a function gig. Can't remember where it was. They all blur into one. Mm. Maybe in Surrey somewhere.
Probably, yeah.
Classic function venue area, isn't it?
I think you can remember not the date specifically though, but you were off to New York the next day.
It was June 2000.
It was 2018. I know that.
Yeah, that's right. And I remember the function distinctly because we had two Depp guitarists on it, and they were a bit like, "Ooh, how's this going to go?"
Yeah.
And that was a very, there weren't many people there. It was a very small wedding.
Yeah, it was.
We played, what's the Proclaimers song? 500 Miles.
Yeah.
And they did like a conga line. The whole audience left the room, everyone. And we were left on our own playing 500 Miles, sort of looking at each other, kind of miffed.
Yeah, I forgot that, yeah.
Carry on. So that's my...
Yeah, no. And then they did come back at some point. But but I remember thinking, oh, he's quite a good laugh, this guy. And I thought if we ever have another gig, we need
in 6 years.
Yeah. In 6 years.
6 years time, he will mature.
4 years, we'll start a podcast. But then I remember we had another gig with the same band and February of the following year. And we needed a guitarist. And instantly I was like, oh, let's get that guy again. Because you were someone I was like, I'd met you once, and I was like, I feel like I could be mates with this guy, but I've only met him once. I'm not just going to message him. I'm still trying. Yeah, this is it. And anyway, we had this gig in London in February, and you depped for, I can't remember which guitarist. I think Max. Anyway, it's not important. And you were just on it with the banter. You said one of the funniest things I've ever heard when we got to this wedding. No, it wasn't a wedding. It was an office party. And
that was weird.
That was weird. And I feel like it peaked early because we turned up at about 3 or something and everyone was pissed already. And they were just in this big function room. And people, what was it? They had to like tape each other up in cling film.
That was very odd.
Yeah. That was one of the games.
It's a good team building exercise.
Yeah, they're doing team building.
Suffocate your colleagues.
Yeah, but it was like full body cling film. And then I feel like I might be exaggerating this for a story, but I feel like they only had like their mouths free and their eye. I can't remember. I feel like they even did their face. Anyway, there's people.
I feel like this would be on a Netflix documentary soon.
Yeah, it was a bit weird. And Dean turned to me and it's pretty much the first thing he said to me. That day, he said, oh, this looks like a usual Saturday night for me, except there's usually someone spitting on me as well. And I was like, that's it. He's dirty as fuck. And we're going to be best mates. You know what I mean? And then we had a gig and it wasn't that great. But then after that, anytime I've needed a guitarist, I've asked George Cashmore.
I've asked George Cashmore and then he's not been free. He's been too busy. So I've done it. Sloppy seconds.
Yeah. And then I've been fortunate enough to play with your 80s band and stuff.
Yeah, George has become quite a regular dep in my sort of band.
Yeah, when past guest Daphne can't do it because she's always touring the world.
George steps up.
I step up.
And right, what frustrates you about George the most?
Oh, that's a great question, isn't it?
As a person and as a drummer, they could be two separate things if you want.
I'm going to lean back.
I feel like this could just so easily become savage, couldn't it? Like
yeah. Well, this is what I want.
Where's the line?
There isn't a line. This is going to be the worst episode, but the best.
About George the most. Oh, by God, does he love talking about himself. Jeez Christ. That man, I've never heard anyone talk about himself so much. Out for a drink. And it's, anyway, let me tell you about this. Let me tell you about this thing. Oh, I was on a gig today. Anyway, but let me tell you about what I've been doing. Let me tell you what I've been up to.
Yeah.
I come away and I'm just like, I'm bombarded. He's chewed my bloody ear off.
Yeah, I do that. Yeah. I used to be shy and now I don't shut up. Drumming wise, what don't you like?
Wow. Drumming wise? No, I mean,
shit.
Let's start with what you do like.
Okay. Well, actually, let's open up to the one question I've prepared. What do you want when playing with a drummer?
We've gone back to that question.
Yeah, let's just do it now.
I think confidence.
Mm.
When you play, I play with a lot of depth musicians actually, and sometimes entirely bands that have never met before, and everyone in the band is depth. We all know those gigs happen. And I just think the one thing that is so important from the drummer who is counting people in and you can be in control of the structure of the song as well if people aren't sure on the sections, is just really to commit and to direct, I think, in certain situations, in those kind of situations when sometimes there's uncertainty. And again, if you're filling in, if one of the bands that I play in has the regular lineup, and then, for example, you're standing in, George, which is one of my favorite things about you, actually, is you do really commit to the songs, and you're not afraid to go, one, two, we're starting now. Regardless of, I'll still be tuning, and George is counting in, which is really great because you're putting the gig first, regardless, and therefore, as an audience member, it's not as clear that you're filling in someone else's gap, is it? You're really taking control of the situation. So I'd say that's the first thing is, confidence and the ability, I suppose, to read situations and adjust quickly. And I think it's less so about the parts, isn't it, and the actual playing when you're depping. I think it's more so about your attitude a lot of the time. Would you agree with that?
I agree with that. I think my only ever example of not playing on the drums for a gig was when I've done bass stuff. And my thing is I just want the drummers to just keep it simple. I think that might be because of my bass playing abilities, but it's almost like if they do a mad fill, I'm like, well, I'm lost now. I don't know where the beat is. Just give me the beat, because you're not actually really, I found that you're not really listening to much beyond like the kick and the snare a lot of the time. That's all you want. You just want, if it's pop or rock music, you just want kick and snare.
Yeah.
And if a drummer's trying out some new linear fill, you're like, well, this is not even, but it's funny, as a drummer, sometimes you're like, oh, maybe I'll try something really tasty. And then that will, that will make the band love me. And it's like,
that'll make me feel alive.
Yeah. And they're probably not even listening, it's like, there's no need for it. So yeah, but I get what you mean about confidence and stuff. It's like,
You've got to be a bit fearless with it. And it's because, I mean, for me, it's the second that you dwindle and the second you, when you second guess yourself, if you're depping, that's when you double over and then you make a mistake. Whereas if you were just like, right, crash through this, be fine.
Yeah.
More or less is what you want. And you said that the other day, we did that gig in Leeds.
Yeah. We'll talk about that. But yeah.
And you said that I'd started a part really like strongly and you liked it, about really up flying by the seat of my pants. But I think you commit, don't you?
Of course you do.
That kind of comes across. So I think drummers, where any kind of musician really, it's just, and especially going to university, like, and I don't know if your experience like that at BIM, George, but people play on all kinds of instruments and they play well and be technically amazing, but the second you get into a performance scenario, quite often they shy away, or they don't
you know, really go for it as much. And I think you just need to, even if it's better to make a loud mistake than it is to play the whole set really shy, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I like what you said about not knowing that it's a dep. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I'd never want it to be obvious.
But you've become part of the woodwork now in the 80s band, haven't you?
Well, I have, yeah. I'm slowly trying to get in more and more, you know? You ever played with drummers where it hasn't gone well?
Yeah.
Can you tell stories about naming names or bands and why?
Name names. Out them now. Mainly in sort of auditions, I would say, when you're getting bands together. Do you remember the website joinmyband.com?
No. Ben, do you remember this?
I think I only discovered this website about 2 days ago.
Really?
And I was on Reddit and someone was asking about something and they said, they were maybe looking for a drummer. So they posted on the drums forum and said, and someone said, have you tried Join My Band? And I looked on it. And I, filtering through, and it was like, it's weird. This is just...
It's like free ads, but for musicians, basically. Yeah. It's very strange. I think when I was starting out and I was still living back in the ends, back in the hood, Portsmouth.
Gosport, specifically.
Yeah. I, as a teenager, I think there was a very limited pool of people in Gosport, so I would have been...
Most of them are related.
Yeah, that is true, yeah, and married. And... I was looking for new people to play with. So joinmyband.com became a regular part of my search history. And just some of the people I would go and sort of jam with or go to like a rehearsal room, think, fucking hell. Oops, everyone else.
Yeah. Oh, you do what you want.
No wonder. Yeah, just again. Yeah, just like strange people who like really flaky as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, no one, I mean, does anyone really stick out? Not really. It just, three or four, just really bizarre rehearsed, just awkward. Just people have no social skills, do they?
We could talk about our worst gig we ever did.
Oh, the dog gig.
Instantly.
Worst gig you've ever done?
No, I don't think so, but I think it's...
You've got worse gigs.
I mean... Have you got a worse gig?
I've done a couple recently. Well, I say recently. I did a gig 5 or 6 years ago at a hair salon. And recently, again, I also played at a hair salon a couple of days before Christmas. And I'm like, right, is that where my career is at now? What kind of circuit you on, mate? Oh, it's just mainly hair salon.
What do you mean? As in, like, I'm imagining, like, three mirrored walls with the chairs and then you're in the corner.
That is bang on.
What, where, why, how?
Crawley.
Money.
Because it was sort of it was like an anniversary of the business or something, the guy that runs the hair salon.
Was it you on your own?
No, I was doing a duo. So it's me playing guitar and then a singer who's very good actually. He had a radio mic and he was sort of going around like whacking out Valerie into these ladies' ears whilst they were sort of getting a cut and blow dry. That's so bizarre, really weird. Obviously, I'm fixed as well. I'm sort of stood in the corner and I'm just like, looking around, just like, oh, this is so strange. So they booked this time, most recently, the salon scenario was they booked the duo to play five sort of really short sets in the daytime. And then, so we did three sets in the day, and then they closed the salon for like an after party. And all the hairdressers had been drinking all day, so that by the time it got to the after party, they were all just sloshed. And then we did a couple more sets. I was stood in the corner of a salon for a very, very long time.
Was it the same salon? They just asked you back?
No, later. Different salon the first time.
That's even weirder.
Words got round, yeah.
First time was arguably even weirder, and this was for... a salon in London, and the guy offered the most expensive haircut in the world or in the country or something. I think it was thousands of pounds for this haircut. Anyway, The Guardian supposedly were running an article on the most expensive haircut in the world, the UK, whatever, and had sent a journalist along to have it reviewed. by some strange connection, the singer in the Bowie tribute in the 80s band, my good friend Tom, and I had been drafted in to play some David. They had like tributes on to entertain the person who's having the really expensive haircut. So you get this haircut, you get a 3-course meal, champagne, people obviously sort of pampering you while having a haircut, which it's just not what you want, is it? When I go to the barber, I get annoyed if he starts talking to me about my day. I just go on with it. Anyway, let alone, I don't know, meals and drink. So we went up, played 3 David Bowie songs to this woman in having her haircut, who was obviously just a bit like, what?
Yeah. Is this where my money's gone? Is that what she's thinking?
Well, I guess she was getting it for free because she was a journalist. Anyway, article, never seen the article.
Ah.
Okay, it came out. So someone just does a good trick. She probably didn't even work for The Guardian, did she?
No. I want to know why was it such a good haircut? Why was it so expensive? Well, is he doing something different? Or?
He is, the person is a hairdresser to the stars.
Oh.
He cuts lots of famous people's hair. So it's probably quite a good one.
Yeah.
And yeah, there was some
wasted on me. Wasted on me.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah. Not one for us. Fair play.
Do you find, because it's, you spend all this time, you start learning an instrument as a kid and you get better and better and you join bands and you have a, you know, you go on to further education and you have a dream and you have supportive family and you have this pressure of making it. And then you find yourself in the corner of a salon. Do you just think, fuck's gone on here? Like, is this, it's weird, isn't it? It's weird where it takes you. And yeah, you drive 6 hours and you play to 10 people in a field. You're like, fuck's sake.
I do think that. Yeah.
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 I guess, I mean, well, for both of you as well, it's not necessarily finding something else to do, is it? But I think for me, I have those gigs that remind me of why I do the ones that are strange. I'm not saying that either of the salon gigs, they were both all right and, you know, make great anecdotes and everyone was really friendly and, you know, it's just such a strange scenario. And we'll come back to the dog gig as well, George. But yeah, I think when you do those, you have to have other stuff you do as well, where you're like, right, this is why I do the weird ones.
Yeah, like, I should mention, I'll say it for you so you don't have to embarrass yourself, but you have played some bloody good gigs. Do you know what I mean? Like you played, you know, big venues and, you know, well, that thing with Martin Rossiter and sold out. Where was that?
Kentish Town Forum.
Yeah, so you've done some cool stuff. But I remember you saying this to me once. You were like, I feel like I do 8 gigs and 7 of them will be shit and weird and then the next one will be go to academy and then it'll be back.
But it's not even the prestige of the gig. Sometimes the most fun ones are with your mates, like the one we did at the Brunswick, George. We all came when you played for 80s, when was that, like July?
Yeah, that was great.
We all came away from that being like, that was such a fun gig, and I think we'd all probably done a couple of whoppers or weird ones in the week. And when you're with your mates and you're, it's when you're looking around and you're all playing and you look at each other and everyone in sync is like, this is really good. Like,
It all clicks.
You have that moment, you're like, this is why I put myself through playing Valerie and Brightside, you know, really? 80 times.
I mean, that gig, I'd argue, had the 3 M's, you know, which you were the person that told me that.
Yeah.
Which we'll say again, money, music, mates, you know what I mean? I enjoyed the music, mates, and I think it was all right money, can't remember, but I mean I got paid, so it's cool.
That's great, isn't it? But yeah, to tell maybe you can tell the dog gig story.
Well, we've already told it and I do feel like bad for Elliot who listens because it was his gig. But it was where we played at a Christmas Santa park run.
That one.
Yeah, and yeah, there were more dogs than people. We're playing in a marquee in December and I forgot this bit, but Elliot mentioned they were taking the marquee down while we were playing, you know, and there was no one there. And it was great because after you've done a park run, you just want to go home. And they'd finished the park run. And then about half an hour later, we went on. So it's like everyone had gone. No one was sticking around. But, you know, I should note, we did have some good gigs with Elliot. So what are your goals as a guitarist continuing your career? I'll ask a proper question.
to improve, I suppose.
Yeah.
Always. I think that's one of the great things about being any kind of musician, isn't it? Is you can never really complete an instrument. And I know you've had that second wave fairly recently, probably a year or two ago now, where you've gone back to having lessons and really going back to your technique and thinking, you know, what can I do here? And that's an incredible thing to have. So I think, yes, definitely to continue learning. Mm. It could go, especially for this year. I mean, it's difficult to be motivated in January, isn't it? So there's a lot of thinking about what would be good going forward. And to play more gigs, play nicer gigs, I think.
What do you mean by less nicer? Salons, better rooms?
Less salons, less dogs,
yeah. Oh, okay, yeah.
People. But I mean, I've been very lucky in the last, couple of years to have played at some nice sort of theatres and places like that. And those are good, really nice to play at. You know, the sound's good and there's separation on the stage. And once you've done a few of those, I think you do get a bit of a, like, lust for it. I think it's, you're like, oh, I want to do more of this kind of gig rather than, you know, just pubs.
Yeah. I remember you saying after you played Kentish Town Forum, you were like, oh, it really makes me feel less, not nervous, but like, I don't, maybe nervous about other like gigs that are smaller, you know. I remember seeing you at Concord too, and you were like, this seems small now, you know, after I played bigger places.
I don't even know if it's the size. I think it's coping. Once you cope with, you can cope with that much pressure, and you know you can cope with that much pressure, I think you're a bit, it gives you kind of a faux confidence where you're a bit like, oh well, this is basically fine, I've done the other stuff. But the still the hardest gigs are the ones where my family come.
Yeah.
Always are.
And they come to a lot. I've met your mum and dad quite a lot.
Yeah. My mum and dad are very committed to coming to a lot of gigs.
Yeah, it's sweet. Yeah. What kind of pressure do you mean with those big, is it the size of the room or is it the set or?
I think for me it's always about the audience reaction and the way they receive it. And if you're playing in front of a couple of thousand people who have paid more money to see you, I think without even trying to digest it that much, you're inside my head. You want to be better. You just want to be really good for those people.
Yeah.
Especially when the act as well has got some kind of weight behind them. And it's not, you're not playing with Joe Bloggs, who's not really got following. You're playing, you know, you're playing with someone else or, yeah, there's a bit more to the music. People like the music and they respect it, and there's a bit of a legacy there. I think you'd always want to do that justice in that instance. So there was a lot of pressure for that. And then in the other gigs I've done with Laurie, obviously, who's been on the pod, with Barbara, I think similar sort of thing, which is that if there are a lot of people there, we want to get them on our side. You want people to like what you've done, and especially when it's your own music as well, it's your baby, it's part of you, isn't it? And you're presenting that. So I think that's where the pressure comes from, and it's coping with those internal, the imposter syndrome of, or, you know, is this good enough? Are people going to like it? Am I good enough? Is the performance going to be good enough? What if the sound's terrible? All that kind of stuff. And when you get off the stage and you think, oh, actually that went okay, then when you come back to playing somewhere locally, you're just a bit like, psh, you know.
Yeah, I can do this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that, is there a pressure also? Because you've done a lot of quite cool support tours with Barbara, and you've got one coming up with Paul Weller, which is very cool. Is there a sort of pressure with that in terms of going, well, no one is here to see Barbara? You know, like,
100%. And the thing with Barbara as well is the music is, very niche, you know, it's sort of 70s maximalist kind of fop pop. It's not what you'd usually see of a support of like an alt rock band or indie rock or something. You know, the promoter gets on, oh, these guys will be okay, they're inoffensive. We're not offensive, but it is quite brash, quite overt. So I think, yeah, with the tours we've done previously, I think when we did the Divine Comedy stuff, the music's quite similar. So I think, well, not similar, but it's kind of similarly constructed. So I think we knew it would be sort of okay. And then we did Haircut 100 and we had no idea what the reception would be like, because they're more sort of funky and we're not, we're a bit more sort of glam. So yeah, I think there was definitely a, well, how's this going to go down?
Yeah, I feel like I already know the answer to this question, but was there ever a, like a conversation of like, okay, this band is like that. Should we perhaps change our, not sound, but like, I don't know, maybe play more songs that are catered to that, or do you just go, no, this is us?
That conversation does happen. Yeah. Mainly we've got a half an hour set that we think represents the band really well, I guess. And we've played quite a lot, so it's very together. And then, we also have got quite a few new songs which we're excited about. And it's, at what point do we start putting the new songs in? And then, but we don't really want to take any of the old ones out. So yes. And I also think with that band, it is Marmite. People are not necessarily going to like it. And I think we all know that. So trying to change anything just to please a few more people, it sort of defeats the point a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Because it would water it down to some extent.
Especially with Weller coming up. I mean, he has a very devout fan base. Luckily, I suppose his range of music is quite wide, so hopefully some people like what we do. But yeah, I mean, I've got no idea how it's going to go down, to be honest.
Yeah, we'll hopefully it'll be all right. Just play Town Called Malice if it starts going wrong.
Yeah, we'll just whack out some jam covers.
Yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Well, I've got a question for you.
Thank God for that. I've run out.
And this is from the perspective of someone else on stage with the drummer. And this is about hearing protection, drummer volume, and within the proximity where you are as a guitarist to the drummer. Some stages are very small and you're probably going to be right up next to a crash cymbal. What are you doing to protect yourself, and what's it like being stood sort of that close to a kit for a couple of hours, and is it annoying?
Well, I have the molded ear, the protectors, and they are the buds, and they're really great, but I am and I'll admit this, excuse me, terrible. I'm terrible at putting them in. I like.
Oh, yeah, you've got small ear holes, haven't you?
I've got small ears. I think
that's the one.
The holes are a normal size. Thanks for asking.
I thought you had small ear holes.
As the actor said to the bishop. I think you've got to use ear protection, haven't you, really, if you're sensible. I mean, sometimes I'll forget. Sometimes I'll just think, I'm only playing for half an hour, so it'll be all right, which is a terrible, terrible attitude. You should not do that. crash cymbal is the worst, and especially with... I'm gonna get under George's skin a little bit here.
Please.
When we play with the 80s band, you have the click and the backing track on ears, so you can't hear how you've got some isolation. You can't really hear how loud you are. And mate, sometimes we've done tiny pub gigs at the Black Lion, and you twat the crash cymbal. You like twat it, and I'm stood. I can touch it. I'm stood maybe a couple of feet away, and there's George playing for you too, and the local pub. Really, painting it.
Well, I get excited when we play Rio by Duran Duran. Like, fuck yeah, this is a good tune. Yeah,
famously crashy, that song, isn't it?
Well, it is. Yeah. You got to get those hits. Dun, dun.
The reason I ask is because as a drummer, it's like, we're the one holding the drill, so it doesn't bother us.
Mm-hmm.
The volume doesn't bother us. It's everyone else. And I guess
from that, yeah.
And especially, I've been so close where, like, you hit the crash cymbal and you accidentally catch the elbow of the bassist or the guitarist because you're literally sat. And I just sometimes think, like, oh, that's quite close to their face. Mm. I might just drop it down.
Yeah, that isn't 20%. If you're in, the Red Lion or whatever, that is not fun.
No, and Dean, what Dean does, you're the only person who does this that I play with, you just grab my cymbal and choke it. I'll be playing. Yeah,
if it's annoying me, I will do that.
Just unscrew it and take it off. Do that in the next gig.
Yeah. Mate, there are eight people here. Why are you hitting it that hard? They don't want to hear you crash. I don't want to hear you.
And five of them are in the band. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. I enjoy it. You know, I'm having a good time. Sue me.
Have you ever done a gig where they have a plastic screen protector around the drum kit?
Mm. I don't think so. No, I don't think so. I can imagine that'd be quite good for the sort of isolation, though.
Yeah.
And the mix. Well, this gig is a big point of contention at the moment in the band, because the tour we've got coming up is all on in-ears, and we've not ever done that before. So I think that'll be good for the old hearing protection, definitely. But also, I've done a couple of gigs where I've had to have drums in my... There's been enough separation for me to be like, right, can I get some hi-hat? Which is quite strange.
That's what I was going to ask.
It's usually the thing you don't want any of.
Yeah. How much kit are you having in your ears? Because it's different. I mean, while we've got a different musician... instrument person, fucking hell. Well, you know what I mean. You're a guitarist, you're not a drummer. The drummers usually go for like kick and snare, and then I go for like vocals and then bass. And in guitar, I'm not as fussed. I don't really need it as much.
It's funny because you don't need me, but I really need you.
Yeah.
For me.
Oh, that's the title, right?
There you go. Thanks.
Summarizes your friendship.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, what about music? Please come to what?
Please come to the gig with me. Please let me on your pod. Oh, please. No, I think in terms of mix, for guitar, it's where the subdivisions are. So like you said, for bass, kick and snare, sure. But also our bass player, Jamie, always wants to stand hi-hat side. And I think that's super important for guitar as well. Yeah, jokes aside, hi-hat ride, your crashes, because that's where your subdivision always is. That's where you can get your, I don't know the actual musical way of wording it, your smallest subdivision is the right way, isn't it?
Did you just say, you'd rather be like the ride and crash side? That makes sense.
I always insist on standing right next to the crash.
Sorry, I honestly zoned out when you were talking. Did you say... you want to be like the hi-hat bit, like Jamie, or what?
I'm saying in terms of mixing,
this out.
It's really important because that's where you get subdivision from. That's where, if I'm playing eighth notes, you'll be playing eighth notes or 16th notes. So
yeah.
Everyone assumes kick and snare because those are beats one aren't they? 2 and 4.
Yeah.
But you yeah, as a guitarist, you want hi-hats, just so important.
Yeah. Well, I spoke to Jamie about that. I asked him the question just after that Bowie gig, because he was very kind about my playing. And I was like, what do you look for? And he was like, just keep the beat. And he mentioned a drummer who overplays, and he says, I find that I can't, there's nowhere I can sit. There's no space anymore. You know, he says, whereas if there's just a beat going, then I can sort of, you know, move around a little bit. And yeah. I was like, yeah, it's interesting.
About filling in the gaps, isn't it? Yeah, I actually vibe, as a guitarist, I think I vibe with drummers a lot. Yeah, I think maybe it's the physicality of, so I like to move around quite a lot on stage, and I think it's great to go over to the drummer and sort of, you know, you can enjoy it together, can't you?
It's, oh my God. Yeah. Well, okay. All jokes aside, you are by far my favorite guitarist to play with, you know, and I won't kiss your ass too much because, you know, get embarrassing. But yeah, but I mean, even after that first gig, I was like, fucking hell, this guy's another level. I think that's why it's weird, because, you know, you hang out with you and you're fucking disgusting most of the time. And just dirty sense of humor, just real, you know, gutter.
Just, I don't know what you're talking about.
But then you play a gig with you and then you're like, wow, that was, where did he pull that from? But I think you're the only person, and this is going to sound cheesy, but I feel like we have like, this does sound pretentious, but like a conversation when we're playing. Do you know what I mean? Like, you'll do something that's a bit funny, so I'll do something back that's a bit funny, or like, you know, it's like,
it's just playing off each other, isn't it?
And it is, yeah. And it's, and you don't always get that with guitarists or anyone else.
I think you have to do so many gigs. You know, you both know, you play hundreds and hundreds of gigs, and you just get that through playing loads.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, and
I just laugh when I'm playing with you. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, this is funny. This is now a funny gig just because of something. Like, you'll try and throw off. Yeah, I think it is, because you're still getting the job done. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, you know, you'll do something.
Like, oh, it's a joke at work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You'll do stuff to make us laugh. You know what I mean? But that's what I always think, that's a sign of a really good musician, when it's like you've gone beyond playing the parts. So now it's like, oh, you can play the parts and the crowd won't know, but you're doing things that, I mean, even just the lick, you know what I mean?
Like, we discussed the lick on the pod before.
No, we haven't. Do you want to tell everyone what the lick, I mean, musicians that aren't drummers will probably know this lick.
Probably know what the lick is, but it's a musical phrase that that occurred in a lot of sort of jazz solos and things. And it's natural. The thing is, people play it and don't even realize they play it, because it is quite a musical phrase anyway, but it became a bit of a joke. And I like to play it on gigs a lot.
Every song. Do you want to hum what the lick is?
Maybe I can play it for you, actually.
Yeah, yeah, do that.
Go get the guitar.
Get the guitar out. Come on. Mummy and Daddy want to sing along. This guitar's not in standard tuning, so that failed, didn't it? Yeah, he's really professional.
Yeah. There you go. Perfect. Perfect. And Dean plays that, I'd say, half of the songs in a set, and it's just funny.
Or again, if there's more dogs than people at the gig, or you know, there's 7 people in your pub, you're getting licked, mate. It's what's gonna happen. You're licking it up.
Yeah. No. Well, let's talk about you.
And that joke died. The lick died as well. The joke fully, it ran its course. People were, it was funny for about a year, but I'm keeping it going, baby.
Well, let's. I don't know how long we've been going.
Are you a guitarist that helps load drum gear?
Oh, that's a good question.
Every time. Every
single time. Yeah, he does. Yeah, he is good. Yeah.
Good boy.
Yeah. All hands on deck, I think. It's important, isn't it? You've got the most stuff. But this will be a drummer dig. Sometimes you'll do a gig with a drummer and they're so used to other people helping them load their stuff out, they actually just don't bother. They'll put it all in the cases and they'll just.
I hate that. That's weird. I've never done that.
Go for a walk. Oh, boots open. It's all cased up.
Yeah. Mm. Dean's someone that helps so much. I feel like you've helped me put my kit together before, and I have to be like,
the thing is, if I set my gear up, what else am I going to do? Yeah, it's probably quite annoying, isn't it?
It's really annoying. It's the equivalent of me just putting all your strings in different places on your guitar neck and going, there you go, try and play everything. but it's not E-A-D-G-E or whatever it is. It's, you know,
a classic five string guitar.
E-A-D-G-B-E. There you go. What was I going to say? Something about drums. We edit this, Dean, don't worry. Something about loading gear out. Oh, I was going to say, I once met a guitarist, I think, on a gig. He didn't help me at all with my gear. I think it was just me and him who turned up. But also, more than that, he was just sort of like, oh, you haven't got anything to bring in, have you, mate? Like, just so clueless. And I was like, is this your first gig? And then he was sort of just didn't help. And I hated it. And after that, I was like, you're dead to me. I'm never, ever, I didn't see him.
Sometimes since. It's forgivable, isn't it? If it's a depth and they've got loads of learning, they've done loads of learning or something like that, yeah, I think you're a bit more forgiving with it. But
yeah. Well, I think all
some
of us
just,
can...
Some people just tactically go for a walk. Singer's the worst.
Mm.
Worst for doing it, aren't they? Be like PA loadout time. Oh, just nip into the toilet or just go for a smoke.
Mm.
It's like, yeah, of course you are. You could have done that.
Well, I think all three of us can agree that Elliot Joseph is the best person ever for gear.
What a unit.
What a unit. Yeah, I'll take both speakers in my hands, you know, whilst having some coils around my neck as well.
Yeah, he's impressive, isn't he?
He's scary impressive, yeah. Ben, have we got anything else to chat about? I feel like after we stop the call, I'm going to be like, fuck, there's so many things.
I'm sort of a drummer.
Oh, yeah, he has got an SPD. Well, let's talk about that.
There's your thumbnail.
What do you use your SPD for, Dean?
I've mainly got a load of samples on it, and then I hit it and the samples play.
Actually, the best thing about you playing SPD is your sticks.
Yeah, I've got light up sticks as well. I'm a joke. I'm like the Nick Jonas to the guitar, to the drumming community.
I wouldn't have guessed. What is that guy, Nick Jonas?
What would be the base of comparison?
I don't know, but Nick Jonas.
Imposter, isn't he?
But
have you seen the video of him playing that, or is it the other
one? Oh, yeah, that's solo. Yeah, I think it is.
That's solo.
It's the other one.
He's got no place. Is it the other one?
Oh, no, I haven't seen it. Has he done another guitar solo?
I know, there's brothers, aren't they? Nick and
Joe. Oh, as in the other brother. Got you.
Jonas Brothers fan, aren't we? Anyway, I hit it, and it's got, for the 80s band, it has like the bit for Tainted Love on it.
Yeah. Bow, bow.
Yeah.
That's very good.
Usually, it's usually out of time. I'm not very good at doing it.
Yeah, but then I have to like play, so then I'm probably out of time. And you also do it on Spin Me Right Round.
Yeah, I've got a bell, cowbell.
Yeah.
For that. I've got toms for Video Killed the Radio Star.
Yeah.
So I think I actually play 5 or 6 songs on that now, which is something I never thought I would see
myself.
Do
you play guitar at all on them, or is it just that?
What, on those songs?
Like during those songs, or is it, do you switch, or do you just go...
There's a couple I switch because they're medleyed in, but a few of them I am just playing that.
Well, there you go. That's reason enough to be on the pod. You know what I mean?
Guitarist and electronic percussionist.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There you go.
So you asked me as a guitarist, what do I look for in a drummer?
Yeah, that was my one and only question.
At you. What do you look for in a guitarist as drummers?
Ah, good. Good comeback there, Dean. I think, I don't know, it's weird because I when I asked Jamie, said, what do you look for? And he told me, and then he said, well, what do you look for? And I said, I want to be able to sense you're there. That might sound weird, but like as a drummer, sometimes you play with a bassist. I don't know if it's the way they play or what, but you're like, fuck, I'm really playing with a bass player right now. Like I can just feel it. And sometimes they're a bit nervous. Maybe it's the confidence thing as well. But I think the same with guitarists. And I what I want from a guitarist is to just let loose a little bit. I mean, that's why I enjoy playing with you so much, because I played with some guitarists before who every gig they play exactly the same solo note for note and won't ever stray from it, you know? And I almost think, you know, the drums, I feel like should be solid if they can. If it's the kind of genre where it needs to be all over the place, cool. But drums and bass, solid. But I almost feel like the guitar has to have that sort of like, oh my God, what is he going to do? Like, I quite like, you know, whenever you go into a solo, say like the Let's Dance solo or the Everybody Wants to Rule the World, or wherever you get a chance to do something. I always just sort of like, I'm just playing the beat, but I'm not really, I'm like another audience member, sort of, not to blow smoke up your ass again, but I'm sort of watching like, what is he going to play tonight? You know? So I think that's my thing with the guitarist, like play the parts, but when it's your moment, fucking do something cool. Don't play the same solo you've always done, you know?
It's about roles, isn't it? And there are definitely situations where that's appropriate and situations where it isn't. There's a lot of, discipline.
And you don't care.
I don't play the lick over all of it. Yeah. And there's a lot to be said for someone playing everything note for note, night after night. And I've done gigs where it's like that. It's very strict and you don't get the opportunity to do anything you want. So when you do, I think, as any kind of musician, you take that, don't you?
That's it. I think if it's meant to be note for note, then yeah, obviously don't go mad. Like if there's some guitar solos, if I ever play an Arctic Monkeys song and some of those guitar, if someone doesn't play the solo right, I get annoyed because I'm like, no, it's that, it feels like they're almost parts. They're not, he wasn't just ripping, you know.
Have you taken another gig on guitar?
No. It was just that one Oasis gig, not for actual Oasis.
They asked me, I said maybe.
Yeah. It's good. That's really good. It's great stuff.
I'm looking for,
yeah, Ben.
Know your structures. Two, one of the main things I find that frustrates me a lot is when guitarists don't have a good sound. They don't have their distortion's too thin or their clean's too warm. And especially with people who use the digital only, is they haven't got that really dialed in. And I want a guitar, especially if it's a single guitar gig, have some fucking balls with the sound, you know, be present. Especially like if you're doing a song and yeah, it's meant to be clean on the record, you're the only fucking rhythm instrument, like chordal, get a bit of gain on there, give it a bit of energy in the sound. And then with soloing, I think, know the original solo, play about with it if it's appropriate. But the extreme example I can think of is a guy I knew, an incredibly talented guitarist, and he'd be like twiddling and tapping and all that. But don't do that on a Beatles song.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And it's like, do it, but do it in the right places.
Mm.
But I think the one thing really is actually the on-stage sound surprises me how some people have quite a shit tone.
It's quite easy to not think about how much the situation you're in changes that. It's easy to get a really great sound in your bedroom and then not think, right, I'm in a church now, so I'll turn my reverb off because the room is, you know, all reverb. Or the other thing about the digital thing is you're always at the mercy of whatever system you're plugging into. So if the PA, and we had that at that Leeds gig, their PA was horrendous. Like just terrible. So doesn't matter how much your Kemper costs or anything like that, if you're plugging it in, you know, to a DAB radio, it's going to sound like turd, isn't it? So yeah, things like that, and always finding a way around that, I suppose, and being able to adjust things on the fly, you know.
Right, last question.
Yeah,
because I'm going to say it's lovely chatting. I'm quite hungry now, and it's
and you're gonna have to edit a lot.
Something, mate.
Who's your favorite delivery company?
DPD.
There you go.
Another for DPD, yeah. It's the window. That's a new catchphrase I want to get going around this country.
Thank you, Jason.
It's the window. And that should be there. And then when they start sponsoring us, and then we have this sort of like big deal with DPD, and when they do like TV adverts and we're on there like, oh, another delivery. And then it's like, it's the window.
There you go.
Is that your favorite? Is that the common most favorite?
I think it is the common most favorite.
I think it is, yeah.
I think because of the window.
On the app, you can see exactly where they are. You know, it's just, it's common sense, really. I was going to say something really rude. I'm not going to say that.
Do whatever you want. Say what you want.
Every just,
you know. Wait, say it again. You cut out.
Every is just criminal. It's terrible, aren't they?
Oh.
Yeah.
Said something like, what did he say? They can suck my big cock or something. I can't remember.
That was pretty much what I was going to say. But
yeah. Any bad stories?
They do this thing. I have this at the moment where they pretend they're going to deliver your parcel. Like you'll be like, oh, you'll get an email, track my parcel. And it will say, are received at the depot out for delivery. That's a fucking lie. It's a fucking lie. If it's 2 or 3 days before you think it's going to come, why have you done it? And then it says delivery attempt failed. Mm. Yeah, because you didn't try and fucking deliver it, you moron.
Three days later
it turns up. It's like, why have you been teasing me? Why have you been edging me about my parcel? You know, come on. Give me the load. Give me the payout.
Wow. There's a lot of sex references in that. Fucking hell.
It's quite sexual, isn't
three.
It?
I counted three.
It's quite
edging, load, and give me the pound. Yeah, fair enough. Well, thank you, Dean. Where can people find you?
Find me on Instagram at the Dino Machine.
Right. Question about that. Do you regret that name? Or
yeah.
Okay.
I do think about changing it, but it's become greater than me now. The worst thing about that was when people started calling me by that rather than my like recognizing me and being like, "It's the Dino Machine." Like, no, it's not.
I had a friend whose email address for quite a while was Paul_Buttstain84, and then he started entering the professional world. And I remember him being on the phone. And they say, "Carl, can we take your email address?" And it was a semi-serious thing. And he was like, Paul_Buttstain, double T. And so he was like, I think I need a new email address.
Like that, mate. In H&M, when they ask for an email receipt, do you ever get that? I have a really complicated surname. Yeah. We already had this when you couldn't send me the Zoom. So
I showed Ben what I've got you saved as in my phone. It's Dean. And
I spelled Llewellyn right. I just missed off the 96. That's what I missed off. Because to me, that's too young. Too young. It's such a late year to be your birth year.
Really? It's still the 90s. When we had Connor Griffiths on, and it was 2001. I was like, that's mental.
It's a bit old, wasn't it?
Yeah. Anyway.
Right. Cool. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on. Yeah. That was
thanks for coming
exactly
on. Good to finally meet you.
And you. Hopefully, we'll meet face to face at some point then. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
Defo. Get him on some gigs.
Great stuff.
Right, nice. See you later.
There we go.
That was our chat with Dean Llewellyn.
How'd you find that, chatting to a mate?
It was good. Yeah, it's just easy. It's easy, yeah. Isn't it? It's just like chatting. It's a different vibe, isn't it? Because a lot of the time, we're chatting to people for the first time, you know? We might have met them briefly once. We might have messaged them a few times. But that might be it. So you sort of have to, as you've said, build a rapport as quickly as you can. Sometimes you're trying to figure out what is their sense of humor, you know? And sometimes you can hear it sort of happen. I think our interview with Kira was like that, you know? It's sort of like at the start, it was like, oh, and then she said, "Can I swear?" And then that was it. She was off, you know, effing and jeffing. And by the end, we were all mates.
Whereas by the end, Dean, I had to cut half of it out because it was a tirade of, no, I'm joking.
But, whereas if, you know, Dean, I've known him for many years, so it's sort of like I wasn't worried. Sometimes I get nervous, like, oh, what if we can't talk to them? But, you know, I wasn't worried about this one. But it's interesting to get a perspective on guitar. I didn't want really to talk about guitars because part of me was thinking, well, this is a drum podcast.
I'd probably cut all that out.
Yeah, probably have. Keep some of it in. Some chat about tone was interesting. But my God, I do apologise. It's going to be a tough edit because we spoke for nearly 2 hours, I think. So,
You know. I get that you're mates. You just kept going. I was like, oh, quite hungry now.
Yeah.
Doing a bit of lunch.
So sorry. But yeah, that was, I always talk about we should do an episode in the pub, you know. I think he'd be the perfect one.
Well, maybe I'll come to Brighton one day. And we'll
I think you should. I haven't said this
get all your little
before,
Brighton mates together.
You should come to Brighton one day and we'll work out a way that we can get all of them. Not all of them at one time, but like, I think it'd be cool. We'll find a space, maybe get a room. Not this room, obviously. It's tiny. Wouldn't fit us all. I can barely fit in here, but you know, I think that'd be good. We'll make it work somehow. Maybe the live show when we finally do that. Episode 200.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Gives us a couple of years.
But
to
yeah,
get
thank
more
you,
of
Dean.
Our mates on. Yeah, thanks for coming on, Dean.
Yeah, drummers listening, if you need a guitarist, he's one of the best. So there you go. Done.
Yeah, you got anything else? I don't think so, mate.
Not really. Save it for when it's just us.
Yeah. But get in touch. Email us, drumanddrummerpod@gmail.com.
Yeah.
On Instagram @drumanddrummerpodcast. On Twitter, now known as X, @balddrummers. Like and subscribe. Share the word. Spread the love. Hit some drums. Have fun. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to Drum and Drummer. You can find us on Instagram @drumanddrummerpodcast. And you can send us an email to drumanddrummerpod@gmail.com. Remember, just pick up the sticks and twat it.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.